Now, live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
All right, happy Thursday to you. Welcome in live at Everbank Jaguars Today here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. All right, Ryan O'Halloran, it is, 4 days since Sunday, right? Since last Sunday.
Sure.
Okay, you've had 4 days. A man as brilliant as yourself.
Hey.
Kind of the Lex Luthor of the local Jaguar media, wouldn't you say, Tony? Right? With the hair going on, the evil genius, all
sure.
that stuff.
Yeah.
You like that, right? You weren't sure where I was going with that.
I got new sneakers over the weekend, so I got feeling good.
He's feeling good. He's got new sneaks. Okay, you've had 4 days, you evil genius. What's the red zone problem? How do we fix it?
I've been spending a lot of time reporting on that for Sunday Story. A couple of thoughts, and I listened to the beginning of your show on Tuesday when I was in the car. I agree with Jeff Logman. I don't think play calling is the problem. I'll defend Greg Olsen in terms of you're down in distance when you're at a 3rd and 6 from the 10, or you're 1st and goal or 3rd and goal from the 7. You're sort of in no man's land in terms of running it.
On those down in distance,
plus,
absolutely.
I think the offensive line has regressed in the last month. I think some guys are running out of gas. A lot of missed blocks in the run game. And I also, people disagree with me when I brought this up in the locker room with the coaching staff. I think it's a mental block. I think when they're getting in there, they're saying, uh-oh, now what?
You do really think
it's
that.
It's like they're gripping.
Here we go again. What are we going to do?
Yeah, either you're playing too tentative because you're gripping it too tight, or you're trying to do too much, which would explain the quarterback going over the line of scrimmage. So, I mean, they say we're going back to the drawing board, but I looked at every failed red zone possession over the last 5 games, and there's just mistake after mistake after mistake. A missed block, missed open receiver.
I'll be honest with you. I think fans get tired of hearing, oh, it's just execution. We're right there. It's all us. If we make that block or we do this, we know we're the ones holding ourselves back. But you believe that may be the case here?
I believe that's mostly the case. I also believe that you guys aren't getting open.
How can that be when you've got – how open does Allen Robinson need to be at 6'3", 6'4", able to jump higher than anybody on the field?
Well, that's true.
When you look at the last touchdown he scored, right? I mean, that's a classic way. He should score a half dozen of those every year. Double-teamed, just throw it up higher than anybody else can go get, and he'll catch 5 or 6, and he'll draw another equal amount of pass interference penalties.
Yeah.
You would think, right?
You would think. When you look at, when San Diego rushes 3, there's no way Blake Bortles should have to leave the pocket. Okay, if you're a receiver, you got to have the awareness to find that open area. There's, even though they have 8 guys in coverage, there's going to be something open. So, it's obviously broken over the last 5 games. The red zone average in this league is 55% touchdowns. Jaguars are at 29.
That is bad. That's
terrible.
Yeah, it's half the league average is where they're at right now. How do you get a young quarterback? Is it just a matter of trial and error and time to recognize, as Gus pointed out on a couple of plays, they had a run called in one of those red zone series where they threw 3 times and came up empty, and because of the look that San Diego gave him, he checked out of it, and San Diego was faking that look. Yeah. And as soon as the ball is snapped, they're backpedaling. So if you had stuck with the run, you're going to have T.J. Yeldon running at a bunch of defensive players who are moving backwards. How do you get beyond that point, or is it just simply a matter of you've got to see it enough times so you start to recognize it, even if it's new, like San Diego threw in some looks apparently that they hadn't shown on tape yet?
Yeah, I mean, they when they rushed 3 in the red zone, not only had the Jaguars not seen that against the Jaguars, they hadn't seen San Diego doing that either.
Right.
So, obviously, when they do it once, you adjust. In terms of that run-pass thing, I asked Greg Olsen that yesterday. I said, what did you think of his decision in that regard? And he didn't slam him. He said, well, they're showing this look. That means it's almost like an automatic pass. Well, to me, it's almost like maybe you have a conversation with your quarterback this week saying, okay, even though it looks like you're probably outnumbered there, four guys against 3 blockers, let's just call it. Maybe the running back can make something happen, which T. TJ's done a lot this year when he didn't think anything was there. So I think that's one of the conversations is these quarterbacks, they have all these rules at the line of scrimmage, maybe just forgetting some of those rules.
It's a balancing act, though, because you don't want a quarterback who's a robot who just can only – you want a guy who's able to be organic out there and see what's happening and adjust to it, and you give him that responsibility because you trust him to make the right decisions. And let's be fair. I mean, he started less than two full seasons. You can't expect him to make every right call in the face of different fronts that they're showing you. They're scheming. They're taking a quarterback who is having some critical turnovers and maybe holding the ball too long, maybe escaping a clean pocket earlier than he should because he's been hit enough times this year. Would you just not expect Tennessee then to look at that film, even though they played the Jags a couple weeks ago, but to mix things up, maybe try some of what San Diego tried against you? Shouldn't you anticipate that coming this week?
I would, and also if I'm Tennessee, I stick to what I did 2 weeks ago because the Jags stunk in the red zone that game too.
Right.
So, you know,
but you always want to mix it up. If you're Tennessee, you don't want to give them the exact same look. Figured, well, they may have game plan for that. Have something that would work against that. Let's try to switch things up on them.
Because the Jets in that game, they did a lot of overload, like three guys off one side blitzing to Bortles' face side, which got him out of the pocket. So, I mean, teams are going to do a mix of what they feel they do best, and then obviously they're going to cheat from previous opponents.
I believe we've got is it Jim Wyatt at 10:20 today, right, Tyler?
Jimmy.
Correct,
that's
yes.
Keith. From TitansOnline.com, longtime writer for the Tennessean in Nashville, as we'll talk about the opponent for the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's coming up in about 10 or 12 minutes. Ryan O'Halloran's here. Fat Tony is here. We'll take your calls today at 641-1010. Also, your texts at the same number on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL. Fat Tony, as the question of the day asks you, what lineup changes, if any, would you make for the Jags heading into the final month of the season? Final five games, what would you do to mix it up? Or just because you want to see maybe some young guys get some more reps? Whatever the case may be, what lineup changes would you make heading into these final five games, if any, for the Jacksonville Jaguars? Tweet us or share your thoughts on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Live at Everbank with Ryan O'Halloran and Fat Tony. Jim Wyatt coming up. We'll hear from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles throughout the course of the show today as well. I'm Mike Dempsey. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
Play clock at 6. They finally snap it. He punts it away. Low line drive punt. Rashad comes up and fields it on the run in the 32. Out past the 40-yard line. Into Titans territory. Still on his feet. Inside the 40-yard line. Inside the 30. Up the right sideline. Rashad Greene knocked out of bounds. Inside the 10-yard line. Boy, is it great to have Rashad Greene back. A tremendous return. It's first and goal, Jacksonville.
Well, the most tremendous thing about that was the Jags actually scored a red zone touchdown one play later.
Boom.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. Shock of shocks. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Tony Smith here with you on 1010XL Jaguars Today as we welcome in longtime Titans beat writer for the Tennessean and now with TitansOnline.com, Jim Wyatt joins us here on 1010XL. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
How you doing? You guys got a good crew there this morning.
We got a. I don't know if it's a good one. We got a crew though. We got a full house.
Hey, he was complimenting me.
I know he was. That's why I'm not sure if Jim's not off his rocker right now. Jim, we'll get into the matchup this weekend. But just what are your overall impressions of the rookie season that Marcus Mariota's had?
Yeah, I've been impressed with him. I mean, obviously, he comes out of the gate, throws first, four touchdowns, has a perfect passer rating in the season opener in the Titans steamroll. The Buccaneers, and I think, maybe he raised expectations too much right out of the gate because he's been good, certainly, but he hasn't been that good every week, but he's shown a lot of poise. He's made good decisions for the most part. He's a guy that players, his teammates really like and respect. And, obviously he still has some things to work on. He's got to improve on the deep ball. He got to improve on decision making at key points. But, I have been impressed with them. I've seen the Vince Youngs come through here, the Jake Lockers come through here, and he's far, ahead of where those guys were at this point of his rookie season.
Jim, obviously, let's stick with Marcus for a second. Rare for a rookie to have two coordinators in his rookie year. How has Jason Michael changed things, and has he called things maybe more to help his rookie out?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what they really want to do is try to establish the run game to help him out, and it's been hit or miss. I know against Jacksonville down to the first go-around, the Titans were slow out of the gate, and they were able to run the ball a little bit later, but very inconsistent there. I think just 44 yards as a team this past week, and that's not how you help a rookie out. That's how you put more pressure on him. So they have – you know, tried to help him out, but his receivers have got to help him out too. And he's playing with a pretty young group, a group that's been pretty inconsistent so far. And, you know, he can obviously only go as far as those guys are going to take him.
Yeah, looking at the receiver group for this Tennessee Titans team, Kendall Wright back in the lineup now for the Titans. Obviously, they missed him when he was gone, but specifically Dorial Green-Beckham, who had to play a lot a couple weeks ago here in Jacksonville, probably a lot more than they wanted to have to play him at any point this season. And it looked like he got gassed in the second half of that game. How has he looked in general through the 2015 season?
Well, you know, he's had his moments, and he's a great athlete. He's a guy that fans want to see more of, because, you know, he will make the spectacular catch and he is a physical specimen, but he's been in the wrong spot, you know, several occasions and not run precise routes and hasn't proven to be a guy that's, 100% trustworthy at this point. And, you know, part of that is because, you know, obviously he's a rookie and he's still finding his way, and he's throwing the fact that he didn't play at all last year. He sat out while at Oklahoma after transferring from Missouri. So he's still kind of finding his way. I think he's going to be a really good player, and I like his attitude. I mean, he's a tough kid and wants to help. He's just, he's still got to learn the game a little bit more. And, you know, there have been situations where he's had a chance in one-on-one situations just to kind of say, hey, this ball's mine, I'm going to get it. And he hasn't done that, and he's capable of doing that. So he's got to, you know, he still has to make some strides here moving forward.
Jim Wyatt here with us. TitansOnline.com is the site of the Tennessee Titans, their official website, and he joins us here to talk Titans football. Jim, overall, what is the feeling about what this team, the fans, want to see them get accomplished over the final 5 weeks? The reason I ask is you already made a coaching change, or an interim coaching change at least, so you're likely going to hire a brand new guy in the offseason. Here in Jacksonville, with the Jags being up and down at best this year, there's a segment of the fan base that is frustrated and wants change in the coaching staff. We don't know if it's coming. So, look, the Titans aren't going to the playoffs this year. Is it just about win as many games as you can? Is it about young players developing? Is it about building momentum for the offseason? How do the fans look at what they want to get out of this last month plus?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is they just want to see, you know, some wins. I mean, this team has been frustrating here for fans because the team's lost games by 1 point, 2 points, two games by 3 points, and a game by 6 points, and they've blown leads in a lot of games. And this team's lost 11 straight games at home. I mean, the last time the Titans won a home game was against Jacksonville when they blocked a field goal at the end of the game last October. And, you know, and since they've lost 11 straight. So people are frustrated by that. They want to see wins because I think they feel like it'll help this young team's confidence. It'll help Marcus Mariota's confidence. There's a lot hanging in the balance here, you know, down the stretch. You know, yes, they did replace Ken Whisenhunt with Mike Mularkey. I think Mularkey could have found a way, and the season's not over yet, but the schedule is getting ready to get a little bit tougher here. You know, after Jacksonville leaves, they go to the Jets, they go to New England, they've got to go to Indianapolis in the last month, and a home game against a tough Houston team. So some winnable games have passed them by here. I firmly believe that if Mularkey could have put together some wins here, he would have put himself in contention for sticking around. Again, that's not a lost cause at this point because there's 5 games left, but he's kind of coaching for his future here, not helping himself with the losing. They're going to have a decision to make, certainly, in Rustin Webster, his name's been brought up, the general manager here. I personally think he's built a team that's good enough to win, and that's evident by all these close games. They just haven't been able to win them. But a lot hanging in the balance here. But more than anything, fans just want to see them win. They're just frustrated by the losing, frustrated by the close losses. And while they're sitting at the number one spot in the draft right now, people just aren't excited about that a year after they we're number two in the draft position.
Do you think Rustin Webster would be charged with finding a new coach, or would that be above him?
It will ultimately be above him. When the decision was made to bring Ken Wisenhunt in here, it was Tommy Smith's call, and that's who was running the show at the time. He's not running the show anymore. Now it's Amy Adams Strunk, one of Mr. Bud Adams' daughters. Rustin Webster was involved in that decision, and he was involved in an interview process that included, Mike Zimmer and Ken Wisenhunt and Caldwell and Gruden at the time, and they eventually decided on Wisenhunt. Right now, as it appears, and this is a lot of this is based off of Steve Underwood, the president. He said that Rustin Webster will. That's what he said after Wisenhunt was replaced. He said that Rustin Webster would be in charge or would be involved in the process. But it's going to be. It's going to be an Amy Adams Strunk decision. And I mentioned Underwood. He's involved in it as well, who is the president right now.
Jim, Tennessee at times right now has five rookies on the field on just the offensive side of the ball, and they have seven players out of the 11 that'll be first or second year players at times on the offensive side. Have the veterans on that side of the ball, the Delaney Walkers, Harry Douglas, who I know just got up there to Tennessee, but have they expressed any level of frustration with just the youth that is around them right now?
No, because I think they knew what they were getting into. I mean, Harry Douglas is one of the guys they signed this offseason. You know, Brian Arakpo, another one on the defensive side of the ball, Denora Searcy as well, Paris Cox. I mean, all these free agents that they brought in, all these veterans knew it was going to be a young team. I don't think anyone expected them to be sitting here at 2-9 right now. I happened to talk to Harry Douglas yesterday, and he frustrated that they haven't won more games, but not frustrated by what he sees around them, because he says, hey, we're better than a 2-9 team. I've been on teams before, and when things are going bad, things get sour. He likes the attitude of the young guys. He likes being one of these veterans who's trying to help lead the way. But that's kind of what you get when you have young players. You have to go through your struggles, and that's kind of where they are. But, don't get the sense of frustration with the veterans just of what's around them. I just get the sense of frustration that they haven't been able to have more success with the team that they've put on the field over the last 11 weeks.
Hey, Jim, let's flip it over to defense. Arakpo's having a nice year. I covered him in Washington. Good edge rusher. They were good in pass defense statistics-wise until Derek Carr went for 330-plus on Sunday. Did Oakland expose something that the Jaguars could take advantage of on Sunday?
Well, what they did is, I mean, and I think it's another point of contention or point of frustration for Titans is they had players in position to make plays on a lot of Derek Carr's mm-hmm. big throws, and guys just didn't make the play. I mean, there was a play down a sideline, maybe a 45-yard completion from Carr to Amari Cooper where Bleedy Ray Wilson was there, and, everyone in the stadium thought it was going to be an interception, and Cooper ends up making the catch, and that happened several times where players weren't necessarily wide open. It's just the Titans didn't make plays. They've got to do a better job defensively. I thought Carr did a good job of getting the ball out, keeping the rack pose and keeping the Jarrell Casey's from being in his face as he delivered the football. And, if there's one thing I think the teams will watch, just like the Jags, is getting the ball out fast and just putting themselves in position to make plays, because until the Titans prove they can make that play on the other end, teams are going to continue to try to take advantage of it.
Well, Jim White, TitansOnline.com. Jim, Dexter McCluster, I don't believe has played since he injured his MCL versus the Jags. Didn't practice yesterday. Are they counting on him suiting up this week?
I think I'll be surprised if he plays. They've got a couple of guys coming back from injury, and I guess he's one of them on the injury report. Al Woods has missed the last couple of weeks. He's on the injury report. Woods practice. It's looking like he's going to play. It's looking like Derek Morgan is going to play. He missed last week after being really limited against the Jags, but I think I'll be surprised if McCluster plays, which means Jaguars will see Antonio Andrews again. Titans hope to get David Cobb more involved. Cobb made his debut in Jacksonville a couple weeks ago, but only carried the ball four times. They want to get him more carries. Bishop Sankey, you know, potentially could be in the mix more moving forward. But I think McCluster, even though he's working his way back, and again, today's practice will tell a lot more. I just think I'll be surprised if he's back. He's only missed one game with that MCL sprain. They expect him to miss a couple. I think he's probably at least a week away.
Jim, we saw a couple weeks ago here in Jacksonville, this was a Tennessee team that looked like they had an opportunity in the second half of that game to really take control, especially with a Jaguars offense that wasn't getting much done on that side of the ball. But the conservative play calling from Tennessee wound up biting them a little bit at the end of that game with the punt return for Jacksonville to give them the opportunity to take that lead and really get ahead of Tennessee for good in that contest. Has that been an issue for Tennessee all season long, that they get a little too conservative in the second halves of games, especially in games where they may have a lead?
I don't know that necessarily being conservative has been their downfall. I mean, their downfall has been their inability to finish games. And maybe they have relied on that defense at times to win it for them when they get a lead. And then something will happen, like a long punt return or giving up a third and 20 or a long fourth down play when you think you have the game won. I mean, those are the things that have killed this team here. I mean, they blew a game against the Colts when they had a 13-point lead in the fourth quarter, blew a 10-0 lead against Buffalo late, lost a second-half lead against Atlanta, lost that lead in Jacksonville, lost the lead against the Raiders this past week, and it's been for different reasons. But I think, to be honest with you, I just think they're at the point where their margin of error is so small that they've put themselves in position to win a lot of games and put themselves in position to lose a lot of games. And right now it's gone the other way, just because they haven't been able to finish teams off.
Change the name on the team you were talking about, and it wouldn't sound a whole lot different if we were describing what's been going on here in Jacksonville this year. In a lot of games, still trying to get through the process of learning how to close them out and win more than your share down the stretch. Jim Wyatt, great job as always. Jim, we appreciate the time from TitansOnline.com. Can't wish you luck, but have a good weekend nonetheless. We appreciate the time today, buddy.
Appreciate it. Hope you guys have a good week.
All right, you got it, Jim Wyatt. On Twitter, simply at Jim Wyatt. I like the press box, low slung that it is in Tennessee.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
You know, it's sitting right above the 100 level, yeah. So you're as close to the field as you are in any place in the National Football League.
Yeah, I guess that's same in Baltimore.
Between is it the same? I've never been to Baltimore. It's the same way.
Same deal, yeah.
Between, though, Tennessee and Indianapolis, you kind of average out right about where the Jags press box is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Indianapolis is like on the top of a skyscraper staring straight down.
Houston makes Indianapolis appear a little low.
Yeah, Houston is bad, really,
New Orleans is going to be on top of the dome, literally, since they
Washington. Washington, you're down
worst,
at the end,
terrible,
right?
Awful.
You're just down behind one end zone. So if it's happening on the other end of the field, you don't have a whole lot of shot there.
No, to Jim's point about closing games, Tennessee this year outscored 93-31 in the fourth quarter.
Let's keep it up. Right. No issues with that. All right. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back. Let's hear from the head coach, Gus Bradley, of your Jacksonville Jaguars. If you want to get in, talk Jaguar football today, 641-1010 is the way to do it. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran here with you, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Doesn't take much. You've had a pretty good day, first of all, right? Because I compared you to an evil genius, right, and Lex Luthor. You had your buddy Jim Wyatt come on the program, and now you get a little JT. By the way, I watched the SNL Christmas special last night. Anybody watch that? Anybody catch any of that?
No.
Now it's a whole thing with Gene. Just once again, 80 Bryant, little baby 80. He cracks me up. But Timberlake was featured prominently on the Christmas edition last night.
I'm sure he was.
He was. Yes, he was. His gift was in a box. And he also was taking it on down to Rapinville.
That was that, I like that one.
That was a good one, yeah.
I have a request for you, Mike.
You do?
From Al Stewart.
He said, the hell out of here, Lee.
He said, make sure Mike does a hacker impersonation. So, Hack, are you looking forward to the road trip to Atlanta for the SEC title game?
Dude, are you kidding me? We're going to get our ass beat. Are you kidding me? We have, like, absolutely negative 39% chance of winning this football game. Are you kidding me? Gators, you think they're going to win? You saw the beating we took in Gainesville this week. You think Alabama? Crimson Tide is not going to do worse stuff?
But have you looked at it from all angles, Heck?
Yes. Treyon Harris is terrible. It's the only angle you need to know.
I'm right.
That wasn't my best.
It helps.
Wait. What was that, Hack?
I'm right, and you're wrong.
Ah, all right.
I don't know how to ride a bike, but I think I can manage a tricycle.
I got to work some of those into my repertoire. I got to brush up on that. That didn't seem particularly convincing today. Although that is certainly the line he's going with. When you go into a game and you say how bad you're going to get whooped, then you don't have to deal with any of the repercussions if it actually happens.
Prepare to be disappointed.
Prepare, right, and be delighted if you're surprised in a positive way. Hypothetical question here on the text line, Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 904-641-1010. It says, hypothetical situation. You're appointed general manager, and the Jaguars are given the choice to trade Bortles for Luck straight up this offseason. Would you do it? Rhino Halloran.
Yes.
Tony.
Yes.
Mike Dempsey. Yes. Hacker. Dirk. I'll answer it later. I don't want to speak for Hacker.
Think about it.
On that one. It's better than Treyon Harris. I know that. yes, we would. Luck has had a rough season. There's no question about it. He's also basically carried a mediocre-ish roster. Average roster. To 11-5 records each of his first 3 years in the league. And, you know, I think the
upside. Sensational player.
The upside is just as high or higher with, I think Bortles has tons of upside too, but I think Luck has already realized a lot of that. We've seen a 40 touchdown season already out of this guy. So yes, we would all make that deal. Tony, you're making the point about why you think Hasselbeck has been successful there.
Look, I think that you're watching him. He keeps winning in football games. I think their offensive line is not any good, and it's why they can't run the ball at all. It doesn't matter who's playing quarterback. They can't run the ball at all at Indianapolis, but I think Hasselbeck gets the ball out of his hand really fast. He just makes a decision, gets the ball out of his hand. Luck's trying to make plays downfield, and so he holds on to the ball, and that bad offensive line shows up, and what it turns into is turnovers because Andrew Luck's getting beat while he's trying to throw the ball. Matt Hasselbeck's just getting it out of his hand quick, and it's getting that offense rolling right now.
You never know what you get on the text line or the Twitter or the phone calls, for that matter. If people are being sarcastic or trolling or just out of their minds or what, but here's one for the 904 area code that said, I would replace Bortles. Now, keeping in mind, we said, were there any lineup changes that you would make over the final month of the season? Here, I'd replace Bortles with Henny because Bortles single-handedly loses every game we play. Yes, and he's also largely responsible for being in a position to lose a game as opposed to have it already been lost from, say, the middle of the first quarter on. So
yeah, that was stupid.
That was not the best suggestion, which makes me wonder, no one can really feel that is a move that they would make or is certainly not going to be made. Should, it's not even on the spectrum of likelihood. There's a 0% chance that is going to happen due to anything other than an injury that would prevent Blake from playing.
Yeah, I think there's a greater chance of Gus cutting his guys, Branch and Clemens.
Oh, much greater
chance.
That's
not happening.
And solid boys. But even if those solid players, as he described them this week, and we all know that's code for not so hot when it comes to Gus Bradley. Look, he'd cut Allen Robinson before he, well, maybe not. That's a little extreme. But you know what I'm saying. That's not happening. No one thinks it's happening. And I don't even think the person who texted that in is thinking that's within the realm of possibility. Let's get to Gus Bradley yesterday, midweek press conference, as the Jaguars prepare to head up to Nashville and take on the Titans. This is Gus Bradley's opening statement to start the press conference.
We haven't had a practice in rain like that. And I know the last game in Tennessee against Oakland, the second half, was a downpour. So, it was good for many reasons for us. So about the last, three periods, I think, was hard rain, so that part was good. But we really challenged our guys. I think there's some obvious things we need to get better at. You know, I think, tackling and our fundamental work is one thing, but the red zone obviously is an issue. Third down obviously is an issue. So we talked to our players this week about mastering the obvious. And that's really been our theme this week as far as bringing those points up, saying, hey, we all know what we need to do. Let's go out there and master it. And with each rep, each thing we do in practice. And that was really our intent. And so the rain that came was another thing that came into it that allowed us to try to attack that. And it was a good practice. Very pleased with how it went.
Fans should be stunned if they master it. They would probably just expect doing it 50% of the time.
Yeah, well, in terms of mastering tackling, when you really can't have contact practices, you have, on average throughout the course of a season, less than one per week, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's 14 you're allowed over a 17-week season. Ryan, how do you get better at tackling?
Yeah, I don't get, I mean, because the missed tackles against San Diego weren't a result of taking bad angles. They just missed them. So it'd be one thing if you're, like, taking the wrong route to a guy. Okay, you watch it on tape. Say next time, go quicker from point A to point B. These guys weren't tackling well enough. So I don't get that one.
Do you think it has – is there any aspect of it? Maybe they're trying to create turnovers, tackle the ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, when I looked at them Monday, I didn't see a lot of that where – they were getting dragged down the field because they were going for the ball.
Right.
Or they bounced off a guy.
Just not holding on.
They just didn't wrap up and they bounced off guys.
Gus Bradley, speaking yesterday, also talked about the advantages or disadvantages that may come in when you're playing a team for the second time that season.
I think there's, the personnel, when you go through it and the scheme, you know, it's still a little bit fresh in their mind, you know, but I think that it's also, you got to be careful that you don't think, oh, we know these guys, we just played them, let's just go out there and, you know, I don't think you can fall into that trap either. And the good thing is both teams are doing some things a little bit different. You know, their emphasis, obviously, tight ends are a big part of their game. And, for us, we didn't have a lot of games to work on before, so it just adds another game into the mix. But I'm not sure, you know, how it plays out. I've been involved where games are like this, where you have one in between them. And, it still comes down. We just approach it like, hey, we got to prepare for this team and start from scratch and go for it. So, but I'm sure there's some freshness in the player's mind, especially about personnel, you know, guys that they've gone against.
Yeah, look, and same happens on both sides. That's the thing, right? And, like, I think the most important thing Gus says there is don't expect it to be a situation where we know what you're going to do. I would expect the coaching staff to change things up. We talked about how Tennessee might approach defending the Jaguars in the red zone, even though they had success against them the first time. They've got to assume the Jags watch the film and try to work on those deficiencies against those particular looks. And so you try to mix your looks up and give them something else. So I think that's incumbent on the coaching staff to give Tennessee something they didn't see a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and take advantage of the fact that you played them so little time ago that you sort of know their ins and outs by saying, hey, okay, we remember this guy couldn't cover us. Let's go after him. You know, he didn't have an answer for Allen Robinson or Julius Thomas 2 weeks ago. Let's do that right off the hop. And then you got to be wary of Delanie Walker, who had, granted, one catch at the end of a half, two catches in hurry up, but he also had a couple big plays where he ran unaccounted for.
Right, he had that 30-yarder out to midfield that he just kind of got lost in between like three levels of a zone, and they've struggled with the tight end.
That was a problem for most of 2 years, and now it's resurfaced.
It has
again.
Resurfaced, right. Baltimore, it was an issue. Tennessee was an issue, certainly against San Diego. You give two touchdowns to Gates. Here's one on the text line, Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. This is a doozy right here from the 904 area code. Didn't Branch get the game-winning sack the other week? So if Branch struggles, he's gone. But when Bortles struggles, you give a million different excuses. Just saying, stop cherry-picking. If you really think these players are comparable, if you really, like, is Branch on pace to set, I don't know, every single season pass rushing record?
Carl Branch?
I don't know who that is from. They don't sign it usually. But if you can't understand, we sit here and criticize all the mistakes Blake Bortles makes. But we also recognize that they're balanced out by the big plays and the positive plays he makes. And That is the greatest hope that this franchise has, is his improvement and in terms of the number of big plays, driving teams down in the 2-minute drill. Just in general, this offense is scoring 6 more points a game than it was last year. In large part, I think, due to improvements in Blake Bortles' play. Does he still make crippling mistakes? Absolutely. And every time he does, we bring him up. Branch doesn't make all these wonderful plays. Yes, he had the, quote, game-winning sack. He had the sack on the final play of the game. It was a coverage sack, and he got there eventually. It's not like he whipped his man one-on-one and got Mariota on the ground 3.1 seconds after the snap. I mean,
Game-winning, he used very loosely.
Game-ending sack. And look, we credit him for that play when he made that play. I mean, you know, when a guy makes a play, he makes a play. He's not going to make... You know, not have 3 or 4 sacks a week. That's not how it works with that position. I get it. But if you honestly think that Bortles and Branch are worthy of comparison in this regard, and that because Bortles makes some mistakes, you should bench Bortles, you're an idiot. I mean, honestly, I haven't used the idiot word in a couple of weeks, but that's pretty much the only classification I can give you, if that's really what you think. All right, moving along. Where are we going next? Gus Bradley talking about the Jags beating the Titans last time out. And does that help your psyche going in knowing you've just taken care of this team?
I think that it's, you know, obviously it's always good, you know, to come out of a win, especially with a division opponent. So, but I don't think they look back in that. I hope they don't look back. The NFL, the way it plays out, it really is doesn't have any meaning to this game. You know, every game is different. You see that across the league with division games. So, you know, I think, hopefully they're not approaching it that way. It's a new game, new opportunity. We're going on the road, and, you know, another set of variables that come into play.
Yesterday at practice, the kicker, Jason Myers, limited with a back injury, so we'll have to see what his status is throughout the rest of the week, but Gus Bradley commented on it saying they're going to have to figure out what's going on with him quick.
Pretty quick. You know, I know he was limited today. I know Dave and I talked about it. You know, we'll see how he goes day to day, but I think the arrow's up on him.
Oh, that's obviously positive, or otherwise you got to make a move, and can't imagine what name would come up. I know what name would come up. We all know what name would come up if it got to a point where Jason Myers had to miss any significant time.
It'd be like 11 guys that would make room for this roster.
Perhaps so. Perhaps so. But as far as you know, as far as what Gus said, he said trending in the right direction. They don't think it's going to be a major deal.
Yeah, I mean, if we get to after practice today and they're saying, well, we're going to bring in a couple guys tomorrow to kick, well, then that's pretty much your sign. But, you know, Gus is usually pretty on point when he makes a statement like that, that it doesn't, things aren't going to change.
They're pretty transparent by National Football League standards in terms of injuries. I mean, you know, Greg Olsen saying, you know, don't expect Allen Hurns this week, basically. No one ever tells you that, even when it's obvious in a situation like that. I don't know if they're, you know, I guess Tennessee can now say, all right, let's take Allen Hurns out of the game plan. How are we going to do things differently?
Well, Mularkey will probably think that the Jags are lying.
Maybe he will. And maybe that, maybe it's the great double cross in that regard. I don't know. Steve Phillips points out, when I'm doing my hackers to get back into him, mixing up. My gosh.
It's
more of a go-to, apparently, in the 2015 season. Steve, thank you for the heads up on that. All right, we got to take a timeout. We'll come back. This Date in Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. Straight ahead, Mike Dempsey, Ron O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. Blake Bortles, we'll hear from him coming up a little bit later on as well. Jaguars Today rolls on 92.5 FM and 1010XL, even though I said it backwards.
I'm a sausage guy.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, This Date in Football History.
All right, This Date in Football History brought to you by Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing. On this date in 1950, the Cleveland Browns became the last NFL team to play a game without throwing a forward pass. They won the game 13-7 over Philadelphia. People may be listening and saying, well, that was just kind of more the times. Well, on the very same day in 1950, L.A. wide receiver Tom Fierce, who would go on to be inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1970, celebrated his 27th birthday on that day by making a then NFL record 18 receptions for 189 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Rams' 51-14 victory over the Green Bay Packers on this date in 1988. The 54th Heisman Trophy was awarded. Why do I mention it? Well, with the Barry Sanders, and he turned out to be pretty good in the NFL as well. In addition to Tom Fears, who passed away in 2000 at the age of 77, born on December 3rd in 1986, James Laurinaitis turns 29 years old. The St. Louis Rams, at least for now, linebacker, I say now, in terms of St. Louis, not for Laurinaitis playing with the Rams. That is this date in football history. It's brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. If you have roofing concerns for your home, for your place of business, re-roofs, repairs, Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing can take care of all of that. 287-7756, the phone number, license number CCC056797 for Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, presenting this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Speaking of St. Louis and a potential move, NFL owners are going to be meeting in January, and many expect that a decision on what team or teams are going to wind up in Los Angeles will be made at that meeting. San Diego, Oakland, St. Louis have until late December to submit their final stadium proposals. The owners have to approve a team's relocation with a 75% vote at least. Tom Brady, after watching Rob Gronkowski injured on Sunday Night Football, is politicking for receivers to get basically the same protection that quarterbacks get by not allowing the defenders to tackle quote-unquote defenseless receivers low. The NFL has clearly already put an emphasis on trying to get the target by defensive players on receivers lowered, not allowing any blows to the head. That's not enough for Tom Brady, apparently. Meanwhile, the offensive linemen continue to be allowed to dive at defensive players' legs without any kind of rebuke. Maybe Brady's complaints will lead to another committee being formed to look into it, since that is exactly what Commissioner Goodell is doing with the murky NFL catch rule. Goodell has asked the group of former and current players, officials, and general managers to take a look at the rule and determine if the league could find a better solution. I'd say a solution where there's actually a rule would be a better solution.
Or at least a rule that somebody can understand. Or at least a rule when you get the replay official, whoever it happens to be, you know, the TV guy who does it now. Every network has one. Can say this definitely should be incomplete or complete, and it actually matches up with what the call eventually is after replays.
I'd rather have a bad rule than what they have. Honestly, I'd rather have a bad rule where if a guy has control of the ball and gets 2 feet on the ground, whatever happens at that point,
it's
we consider
fumble.
It a catch.
Right, it's a catch.
Right, even if it's that bang-bang play and it's something that hasn't been called a catch for years, that's better than watching it and saying, I think that's a catch, and being told that it's not every time. Just have a rule. That's why you have rules.
Well, they have,
make those
they
things
have
simple.
Rules. They're just, I don't think anybody...
What's a football move?
I don't know, but it's part of the rule. It's too subjective. But it is a rule that at least the referee can point to and say, this is, you know, he established himself as a runner, what have you. I'm not saying it's a good rule. They have a rule.
No,
the problem is the way it's written. It's too easy to interpret different ways.
And a couple weeks ago, the Odell Beckham catch against New England that wasn't. And then later that night on Sunday Night Football, they had the two plays were remarkably similar, where the Odell Beckham play got called a touchdown. And when they reviewed it, they said they overturned the call, which means they are 100% sure that's not a catch, right? So then on Sunday Night Football, exact same play happens with Daniel Fells. He catches the ball. He's turning. The guy knocks the ball out of his hands. Seattle picks it up. It could have been a fumble. They called it an incomplete pass on the field, and they came out and said that the call stands. They couldn't overturn the call. There's not enough evidence for us to say 100% whether this is or isn't a catch, so we're just sticking with whatever's on the field. So they contradicted themselves on the same day as far as how they view that play.
Right.
Like, how can this one be iffy? And the one with Odell Beckham, we are 100% sure that's not. It's just, it's so murky the way that they're calling that play right now. And with catches being such a vital part of the game, it needs to be more confident. The officiating needs to be more confident on those kinds of plays.
To have Mike Carey on to explain it. Oh, never mind.
I don't even think he can.
That's the problem. Nobody can, right? I mean,
he would have problems explaining offsides.
What was the one? Was it Thursday Night Football? I'm trying to think what game it was where somebody caught one, looked like they were rolling on their butt cheek going out of bounds, and they're already on the ground.
It was Sammy Watkins, right?
Was it Sammy Watkins? I don't know if it was
in
Sammy
the Bills
Watkins.
Patriots game about a week ago. No.
I don't think that was the one. I don't recall.
That was a forward progress call.
No, yeah, so that's not the one. Anyway, it was right on the sideline, and The guy was kind of like on the ground, his butt cheek down, and they kind of rolled over as he went out of bounds. And did he touch down out of bounds? Shouldn't the play have been over? But he's already on the ground. And whatever it was, whoever the referee was that they go to said, oh, well, here, this should be a completed pass because he is down. He's got a body part other than, you know, whatever, his feet down in bounds, which is an automatic inbounds. And he's completed the catch now as he rolls over. He's already completed the act of the catch. He lets go of the football. That's a first or a completion, and it was ruled the not only said the call stands, they confirmed the call of an incomplete almost immediately, contradicting. So you have two guys, and I'm sure that guy, whoever, I can't remember which one of them it was, you know, knew his rules as well as anybody else out there, and they go to the replay, and it's the complete opposite. And what are you going to do?
Look, Mike Pereira, who I've always liked, and I think he actually does a really good job with that, because he'll say if he thinks that the officials on the field got it wrong, too. He's like, I'm watching, I don't agree with what they called here. And Pereira, I heard him over this weekend, they called him in on the booth on Fox, and he was just like, I have no idea what they're going to do with this. I don't even know what the rules should be on this. And it was just a catch.
Right.
It was whether or not he caught the ball, and he's like, I have no idea what should be called on this play. And that's where the rule is right now.
Those guys are in a tough spot. I mean, that's their job. But, you know, they make those calls, and they immediately get it thrown back in their face the opposite way. It's kind of funny. This guy on the Bortles kick on the text line is not letting go of this one. Let me just add, before we get, because we're going to hear from Blake coming up here in a couple of minutes.
Whoever's texting him, you're getting the host fired up.
I enjoy this, actually. I mean, seriously, the latest one, well, a couple of them, the original texter said in regards to we were comparing Bortles versus Branch, why don't you compare playing time, LOL, and then he cited Jay, so that's his name, Jay. Thank you, Jay. Now we know who is an idiot. I mean, first of all, the quarterback plays every snap. Branch is playing about half the snaps on defense, rotating with Clemens. That's the nature of the position. But even on a per-snap basis, he's just does anyone think Andre Branch is being held back from doing more because he's not getting enough reps on this football team? Apparently Jay does. And then we get this one to dovetail with that from a different texter. How can Bortles' mistakes balance out with the good? His mistakes are causing us games. All right, here's an analogy I will make for you, okay? Let's say Golden State. And I'm not saying that Blake is Steph Curry, but I'm using Steph Curry as an example. Golden State's in a game with the Denver Nuggets, right? And they go out, and Steph Curry scores 45 points in the game, and it's 90-89 Denver in the final 30 seconds of the ball game, and Steph Curry goes in for a layup and blows the layup. Does his mistake cost you the game? Well, you could look at it that way. Are you in the game without his 45 points?
Sure.
Why does it have to be his mistake costs us the game? Look at the totality of the situation. Did his play contribute to you being in position to have a chance to win the game? And do you think that Chad Henne's play, based on the large sample size we have of his career, would give you a better chance to be in position to win football games? Is that really what you think? Because if you do think that, I question how much or how little football you know. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the world's foremost expert on football, but can't we agree on this much, that Blake Bortles is by far the best option that they have at the quarterback position? And overall, Ryan, I mean, look, we do sit here and criticize his mistakes, and I've actually been questioned by people for being too critical of him at times. Hey, we won the game. So you could, whatever the case, isn't Bortles' second year overall, with the exception of the wins and losses, I'm not even going to give you the option. What adjectives would you use to describe how he has played this year?
Encouraging.
Encouraging. That's a great one, right? Inconsistent is fair.
Yeah.
But certainly I'm not going to say bad or liability or something. I mean, that's what these texters seem to indicate, that he's a liability of the team. It's encouraging. It's not perfect, but it's trending in a really good direction.
You know, last year when he had two pick sixes that were the difference in a game, you could say, okay, he was a main culprit, and he owned that. This year there hasn't been, like, I mean, he threw the one against Carolina. They weren't going to beat Carolina anyways. But, like, to your point is, in the games they've lost, he's made plays to, you know, close the gap.
Yes.
You know, give them a chance. So I'd still like to see obviously better red zone stuff, better third down stuff, higher completion percentage, but I think this is all about the progress that he's made this year.
Right. If you, and to me, the progress so greatly exceeds the downside. And there are downsides. There are mistakes that he needs to get over making, mental mistakes. He needs to, whether it's a mental thing in the red zone, he needs to be better. He needs to recognize what defenses are trying to do to him better. I don't expect it all to happen at once, but I'd like to see it pick up the pace in that regard.
Well, for an example, because it's appropriate for this weekend, let's see what Marcus Mariota does next year when he's a second-year quarterback in his second offense. And pretty much start over. So the circumstances of no Julius Thomas, I mean, Marquise Lee, whatever, but not having your tight end, I don't think the offensive line has played great. So, I'll stick with the fact that this fan base should be encouraged by this quarterback.
Look, we talked earlier this week, it may have been yesterday, about if you look at this team and have they met, have they not met, are they exceeding your expectations for this year? And I can go back to before this season started, and we talked about what numbers do you expect from Bortles this year? And I think mine were probably a little bit higher than everyone else's. I expected him to be mid-20s, mid to high 20s in touchdowns and mid-teens and interceptions. That's where I expected Blake Bortles to be this year, and that looks like where he's going to wind up, right?
So be higher on the interceptions.
Could be. I mean, he's at 13 right now, so if he throws one a game, you're talking 18.
Right.
And that's around where I expected him to be, honestly. I think I said before the year 27 and 16 is where I thought that Bortles would be at the end of the season. So from that perspective, for me, I think that he's doing what I thought he would do this year. Doesn't make it any less disappointing when in a game he throws a pick like he did to Manti Te'o.
Certainly.
You know, you don't excuse those things because I expected him to still make those kinds of mistakes despite the fact that he's a second-year player. You want those to go away so badly because he's giving this team a chance every week, and the chances for them go so much higher if he would get rid of those one or two throws a game where you're just like, what are you doing on those one or two throws? But he's also making a couple of those YOLO throws where it's Allen Robinson going up and making a play for him. It's creating big plays for him both ways. Is Bortles' willingness to just take a chance with the ball way too much inside football games?
I clearly remember, Tony, we were talking about some people's projections. I remember Pete Prisco saying he thought he'd have, I want to say, like, maybe 28 and 14. I don't want to put the exact numbers in Pete's mouth.
Yeah, I was thinking 2-1. I was like more like 31 to 15.
See, to me, yeah. Then you're close to being on the mark. Yeah. That exceeded my expectations. I remember clearly saying in August, saying if he approaches those kind of numbers and has about a 2-1, that's a phenomenal leap forward in his second season. Well, the guy, what was he, 13 and 17 last year? 12 and 17? 11 and 17 last year, touchdown to interception ratio. So he's basically reversed that. His interceptions still around the same, because when it all filters out, he only started 13 games last year, so probably on a per game basis they're slightly down, but that touchdown percentage has gone so far up, and that's when we talk about balancing out the mistakes. If for every turnover you create or have, you can put it in the end zone twice, that's pretty much the baseline standard you're looking for. The greats are even better. Aaron Rodgers had some seasons where he was probably like 4-1 or better in that department. But that's not the standard you should set in your second year in the league.
His interception percentage has improved. It was 3.6%
So 3.6% of his passes were intercepted last
this
year.
This year down to 3. But look at his touchdown.
Still too high.
Yeah, his touchdown percentage last year, 2.3%. This year, 5.1.
I mean, dramatically increased. And honestly, I'm sure most fans out there listening saying, we know, we get it. You know, it just, when I hear these people, I wonder what do you have an agenda? What is your rationale that you really think the smart move is to bench Blake Bortles at this point in time? I just don't get it. I get your frustration if that's what it stems from, and you're just being a fan popping off at the mouth. But if you really think that is the best solution for this football team, honestly, what have you been watching? All right, we got to take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll hear from Blake Bortles. We're not going to bench him. We're gonna play what he had to say yesterday in his midweek press conference, and we'll get to that coming up next. If you'd like to get on board and rebut or back up anything that you hear, 641-1010 is the way to do it, and obviously that's the number for the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, which we have been going to frequently this morning. With Ryan O'Howard and Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL 90. 92.5 FM. All right, we'll get out to the phone lines in a moment. Apparently, they're loading up. We've got the text line going nuts right now, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Let me just give you two from opposite sides of the fence. One, this one's from the 904 area code. Improving from one of the worst quarterback years ever. Improvement has to be great, and it's just been good, so still disappointing.
Talking out of both sides of your mouth there.
So you're saying the improvement has been good.
But
he's made good improvement.
But
that's not enough. Yeah. Right? So he's disappointed because he's only made good improvement. It has to be great. To me, when you go for that TD percentage of 2.3, it means every 2.3 passes you throw result in touchdowns, right?
Why isn't anybody talking about this defense that sucks?
Well, because we're talking about the quarterback and he's the focal point, and that's what they got into today. I mean, this whole thing started with a comparison between Branch and Bortles, that someone would think that Bortles is a bigger issue than Branch, or that we're not treating them the same way because Bortles is costing us games, while, you know, not they are not recognizing he's also putting them in position to win football games. As Tony, you pointed out, we were reading through these on the break. Blake wasn't even supposed to play last year when they drafted him.
They were comfortable not playing Blake.
They knew he wasn't ready last year, and he played. And, yeah, he had a bad year statistically. But, you know, it's, you hope take your lumps and you learn from it. And if you don't think he's learned from it, not perfectly, he hasn't taken every flaw out of his game. And guess what? He never will. No one gets every flaw out of their game. Peyton Manning still was throwing killer postseason interceptions late in his career, okay? It happens, okay? But if you don't think the improvement has been great, I guess we're just watching a different guy, or just we have a different set of criteria to evaluate.
Look, there's a lot on the line with Blake Bortles. And, you know, with Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley, there's a lot on the line with this young man, and I can see the improvement from year one to year two. I think it's hard not to see that improvement. I think going into next year, if these interceptions continue to happen, you're going to have serious questions about how high the ceiling can actually be for Blake Bortles. But this is a regime that decided they wanted Blake because they looked at the draft that was coming up the next year and whether they'd be in position to get him or not. They decided they'd rather have Blake than Jameis or Mariota, that they'd rather have Blake than Teddy Bridgewater or Carr.
And that's not us guessing. That's exactly what Dave Caldwell
right.
said.
So there's a lot on the line with Blake Bortles and how much he is able to reach whatever ceiling they had for a guy that they came out after they drafted him and said that they'd be comfortable not playing him for a year because they expected these kind of mistakes when they put Blake on the field, and they were comfortable with these mistakes happening while he learned to be an NFL quarterback. Now, is he going to grow out of them? That's to be seen. He's given this team a chance on a week-to-week basis to have an opportunity to win a bunch of football games this year. Has he been the reason or the main reason they've lost a couple? Yeah. He's thrown some killer picks. There's no way around that. Those have to go away, and the playmaking has to continue. And if it doesn't, then Caldwell and Bradley and everything's going to be blown out of this place. But we're not near that spot right now where we have to be looking at Blake and saying he doesn't have it. There's something there. The other side needs to come with it, but there's something there with Blake.
Well, they were right on the quarter, you know, taking a quarterback in 14, thinking they wouldn't be in a position to take one in 15.
Right.
That's why they took Fowler this past year, because they felt it was not a great pass rushing crop.
And most people agree with that.
Shaping up to be. So, I mean, there are so many things deficient about this team right now.
And it's a follow-up text from the same person said, the Jags are improving slowly from the worst years in NFL history. Slow improvement isn't good enough. That's you're moving the mark now. Now you're talking about the team as a whole. I would agree. You could point to the win-loss record and say it's not good enough. We went from 2-4-3 to currently at 4. Who knows what they'll end up with over these final 5 games. But in terms of the quarterback specifically, himself, 9? I don't think the math works on 9.
I guess it does. Look at all 5.
I can't.
He's a non-believer, people.
5 plus 4. I forgot.
He's got no faith.
For some reason, I added 4 plus 4 in my head, Ryan, and 9 did not work in that scenario. Regardless, again, I'm moving off this couple of people who I don't know what the agenda is, but whatever. I just don't get it. Let's go to Michael in Orange Park up at 641-1010. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Well, when I called, it was before the Blake Bortles saga, but I was going to weigh in on the catching rule, and the one that sticks out to me was just one that struck home was the Brian Walters versus the in New York versus the touchdown catch that Brandon Marshall had. And a question for you guys is, do you think that by holding the referees responsible or maybe putting them in a post-game press conference where they have to answer some questions to get some clarity might help the situation? And I'll take it up there.
All right, thanks.
I think it would help us understand the call. I don't think it would help them make those split second decisions. The suggestion that you made has been thrown out there in terms of, well, why aren't they subject to the questions? Well, they are via pool reporter, and that's only the head referee.
Right, head referee and one reporter can ask the head referee.
This is my 12th year, and I've been that pool reporter a couple times. I've never been asked. Can you go ask a referee? So it's very rare that we need to go ask them a question because of a bad call, but. I would like the process to be easier to get Dean Blandino on the phone that very day.
Right.
Say, we need an explanation right away.
Right. Thank you for the call, Michael. Let's go to Mike at the Beaches next up. What's up, Mike?
You got me going, Tony. I called earlier in the week, and he does it game after game after game when you need him the most. And all he's doing, and you're saying, hey, don't worry about it, he's putting up great numbers. Well, Russell Wilson doesn't put up great numbers, but he makes smart decisions. This guy, when he gets in the red zone, it's as if he turns into somebody else, and that's the problem. I don't know if it's coaching, but I don't see it there. You don't see it there with Carr. You don't see it there with Bridgewater. He's 7-3. He's in his second year. Jameis has got 5 wins in his first year with the worst offensive line.
Let me ask you, Mike.
I don't know that their offensive line is worse.
Hold on. When did anyone on this program say, don't worry about the mistakes
right.
he's making? You're putting words in our mouth that we're not saying. When did we say that?
I heard you say, oh, well, the mistakes happen, and that's no, you know, you got to hope to grow out of them. He puts us in a position game after game. If it's running past the line of scrimmage, if it's not holding on the ball too long, if it's fumbling, his kryptonite is that red zone. I don't know if that's coaching or that's him, but he's going to do it, and he'll do it next week. He'll do it the week after until he figures it out. I don't know what it's going to
be. Let me ask you, Mike, do you think Blake Bortles should be benched for Chad Henne?
No, I'm not saying bench.
Oh, you're not. That's the whole point of the conversation. People are suggesting that Blake's mistakes are hurting them more than. Do you think Blake's mistakes are hurting them more than Blake's good plays are helping them? Is he a negative impact on the game for the Jaguars?
He is not a negative impact, but he is not the positive impact that you say he is.
So what, he's a dead neutral impact? He's either positive or negative. Which one is it?
We don't know yet. That is my point. We don't know yet.
You've watched him play this season, right? Your opinion.
I've watched him play the whole season. It kills me, and I know it's coming.
So, Mike, answer the question. Stop. Calm down. It's okay. Answer the question. Based on your observation from the 11 games, does he help this team more than he hurts this team? Your opinion.
We've won one more game than last year.
Mike, answer the question.
I don't know.
Answer the question.
He's putting up better than
you don't know? All right, Mike. Thank you. Goodbye. Honestly. Just answer the freaking question, Mike. Answer. You can't answer it. You won't answer because you know I'm right. He helps his team way more than he hurts his team. Yes, do his critical mistakes hurt the team? Absolutely. And we're not excusing him for that. But I'm also saying you have to be realistic. If you think you're going to get a perfect quarterback, that's when I say I wasn't excusing mistakes. I'm saying if your expectation is perfection, you're never going to be happy. Okay? He's always going to make some mistakes. Every quarterback makes mistakes. The great ones make mistakes. Okay? He needs to pare those down significantly. Absolutely. But if... people are not watching the same football that I'm watching. If you don't think that Blake Bortles is by far a much more positive impact on this football team than he is a negative impact, you're just not watching the same team.
No, and look, I think it's a little bit unfair to even compare to what's going on in Tampa and Minnesota in the red zone, especially where they have Doug Martin and Adrian Peterson, who are effective.
And Bridgewater has like 10 touchdowns this
right.
year.
But they have answers. They have answers outside of just having to tell their quarterback, go make 10 plays every game when we get down the red zone because we don't trust anything else to work. And look, we talked about it early in the week. I don't agree, especially this week, with the game plan they had. And I get it that they wound up in 3rd and 7 and that kind of thing, but I think they wound up in 3rd and 7 on the goal line because they wouldn't run the ball on the goal line. Like, I honestly believe that that's why they were being put in situations where they were forced to pass, is because they wouldn't try to run. And I think that's been part of the problem this year. And maybe it's a lack of trust in the offensive line to get anything done in the running game. Maybe it's a lack of trust in Yeldon and what those young guys are doing in that backfield. I don't know what the answers are there. I can tell you that I see more positive from Blake than I see negative, and that's not ignoring the fact that he's making killer mistakes for this football team. We've talked about it week after week. He talks about
it. We all know all the time.
We all know that he's making killer mistakes. He's also the reason that the mistakes hurt is Blake Bortles, because he's giving you the chance in that game for him to make a mistake that you go, there it went.
Right, because we had a chance. Why do we have a chance?
Right.
Here's Teddy Bridgewater.
They got to go away.
Last year, the touchdown percentage for Blake Bortles was 2.3%. 2.3% of his passes resulted in touchdowns. This year, he's up to 5. You know where Teddy Bridgewater is this year? 2.5% of his passes result in touchdowns. He's thrown 8 touchdowns all year because he's turning around. He's handing it to Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson is a freaking all-time great. That's why they are where they're at. It's not Teddy Bridgewater.
And it's not a coincidence in Tampa that Jameis Winston basically turned around his season when Doug Martin got hot. I mean, it's not a coincidence that a young quarterback with a running game is better than a young quarterback without one. I those things go together.
All right, let's get one more in before we break here.
Are we sure we want to do that?
Yes. I don't. Bruce on the West Side, you're up next. Go ahead, Bruce.
Mike, it's Bruce. How you doing? I'm headed to Lake City, but you know, you hit it on the head that I was going to hang up with. I don't know what people are watching, okay? Yes, he makes mistakes, but this is the first time in a long time, Mike, that I watch every single week, and we have a chance to win, and we have a chance to win because Bortles puts us in that position. I mean, he throws the ball down the field. Yeah, he's making mistakes. He's played 24 games, you know. The guy who called before, I don't know if he's going to turn out to be a superstar, but I'm certainly not willing to put Chad Henne in to replace Blake Bortles. You got to be an idiot to even think that.
Yeah, well, apparently it's running around right now, Bruce. It's been contagious a little bit. I don't want to characterize that. This is the majority opinion out there.
No, it's not.
But
close.
The fact that it's anyone's opinion,
it
boggles my mind. Honestly. I mean, yeah, seriously, hot take, right? I mean, hot take. And look, I'm with Scott Van Pelt. The hot take has become some kind of a snarky euphemism for having an opinion. So, I mean, the whole hot take thing gets overblown as well. But man, I don't know what else to characterize. Blake Bortles is the biggest problem on this football team, and he's single-handedly losing all these games for
us. A bowl and a word that starts with an S and ends with a T.
Something like that. let's take a timeout. We'll come back. We still want to play a couple of Blake's thoughts from yesterday on taking on the Tennessee Titans this week. We'll also look at the fan feedback spotlight, which is where this all came out of. Shockingly enough, we asked you today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, what position switches or lineup changes, I meant to say, if any, would you make down the stretch for this football team? Would you like to see made, maybe to experiment with what's going on in the field? Never expecting that number 5's name would be brought into the conversation, but there you have it. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you on a Thursday. Jaguars today live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars today, final 10 minutes or so of the program. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. I guess, you know what? He's not going to see it the same way as some people. Just not going to see it that way. Let's see. Here's one. Any GM who drafts a developmental guy with no plans to play them year one should be fired on the spot. Sorry, Bill Belichick. You can't let Brady sit. Oh, sorry. I think it was
Ted
Mike
Thompson.
Sherman. Who was it?
Packers GM.
It was Ted Thompson, right, who drafted Aaron Rodgers and sat him for 3 years. Oh, yeah, he's behind Brett Favre. But come on. I mean, he drafted a developmental quarterback. You spent a first-round pick. You idiot. You should be fired right away. I mean, that, clearly, that's the case. If you don't play that guy immediately, you must be fired right away because there's no longer room for bringing a quarterback along slowly in the National Football League. Impossible. Can't be done that way. Scratching my head. Continuing on. That one from at TJS the Greek. Nice work, Tim. All right, let's go to a couple of thoughts from Blake Bortles from yesterday, starting with the advantage – he sees from his perspective of having seen the same opponent now twice in a three-week span?
You know, I remember thinking about last year, something that it's different. You don't do it in college. You don't play anybody more than once in a season. So to have that opportunity in the NFL to play, you know, divisional games twice, I think it's an advantage. You know, I think you get to know not only schemes and, you know, what they do defensively, but personnel. You know, you get to look at guys twice and kind of, you know, really, I think, get a good look of, you know, what they do well and what they struggle with.
And by the same token, so does the other team, right? I mean, so that will be interesting to see what each team does differently, at least to me, Ryan, this week, if they mix up their approach.
Yeah, and that is something to watch. And where you watch for it is pressure. Do they throw a lot of wrinkles? Do they, you know, more five, more six, more three, that kind of stuff with their rushes? So it's almost like the defense has more things to tinker with. I think they have more options.
Yeah, I think because against San Diego, clearly, they don't want to blitz too often because of Philip Rivers' prowess mm-hmm. against a blitz. Shouldn't be the same case, you would think, with Marcus Mariota.
No. Blake Bortles talking to the media yesterday, and the red zone obviously going to be something that's talked about a lot right now with any of the offensive players on this team. And Blake talked about Julius Thomas and executing there in the red zone.
You know, it's tough, but I mean, there were guys open. You know, I missed Julius for one down the middle, and then two other times I just ran past the line of scrimmage and threw the ball. So I think, we just got to make more plays. You know, there were things there. There were plays to be made. I think on two of those scrambles, you know, for sure one of them, I think I could have run and possibly scored. But, you know, I think we got to continue to pay attention to the details and execute.
All right, let's get to the fan feedback spotlight before we run out of time for today. And if we do have time, we'll go back to the phone lines here in a moment at 641-1010. Today we ask you, what, if any, lineup changes would you make for the Jags heading into the final month plus of the season? Tony, what kind of feedback did we get?
Here's what we got. Bench Branch and Clemens. Start Jackson and one of the Roar instead.
Ha!
Replace Windmill and Clemenade with anyone. From Daniel, I think Ryan Davis and McCray, I'm okay with the offense as is. From Paolo, remove Grotz as a starter and replace him with McCray. From Bobby, no changes, but I'd like to see what happens if we fully commit to running the football. From Eric, I don't think there are any to make. Maybe some D linemen get more reps than others. I really don't know. From Darth Fail, please don't put Alu Alu in the red zone. Give it to Yeldon, please. He's got the two pleases in
there. I'd even go a compromise and say, let Alu-Alu play that blocking fullback role as long as you're handing it to Yeldon.
Yeah.
And give him some opportunities.
They haven't tried that yet.
They have not. No.
No.
Is that it?
That's it.
For the most part on Twitter. A lot of the same on Facebook here. You know, mostly focusing in on the Leos and Dwayne Grotz being the primary targets for switching things up.
I think the coaching staff would love to sit Dwayne Grotz. Demetrius McCray's got to make a play.
He's not playing, and that's the issue, right? I mean, his play last year, we thought he would take another mm-hmm. step forward this year, and that hasn't really come to pass. So they are struggling with both of those guys not performing great.
They pulled Grotz after the Inman touchdown on Sunday, after that first touchdown for San Diego, and it was on Grotz with Dontrell Inman catching that ball, and they put McCray in the game, and what does Philip Rivers do? 35.
Right after.
There's my guy, and they just couldn't cover. Like, I've heard people complain about the secondary all week. It's House and Colvin are doing the job, and it's that third corner spot. Whoever's in there, the opposing quarterbacks are saying, we're not throwing at those other two guys, not unless we have to. We're going to, if it's Grotz or McCray, that's where we're going.
Right.
And that's why if I'm the Jags this offseason, I prioritize finding a guy to cover the slot, because I want to keep Aaron Colvin outside the whole time, because I think he's one of those guys who will get some interceptions and will jump a route and won't be afraid to do that. Whereas when you're inside, you're limited in what you can do that. And you
quicker developing stuff. Yeah, you're not jumping those little quick slants mm-hmm. as much. All right. So again, on Facebook, got much of the same in terms of replies there. Let's get a couple of calls in before we wrap up. David checking in from New Jersey this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, David.
Hey guys, how y'all doing?
Good, thanks.
I just want to thank you guys for being rational. I was going to tell you, we're dealing with this as fans. It's not just you guys. I was going to read you guys something they said about Blake and then read my response. It says, watch the tape of the Jags-Chargers game. There it is again, another game, and the Bortles is the weak link. Running up his numbers, playing college ball between the 20s. When it gets to making a difference for the team and the fans, Bortles lays down. Not his usual college ball antics, but reverse the sandlot football. Doesn't know where the line of scrimmage is on two plays. That's not his fault. Someone forgot to turn on the blue line of scrimmage marker. He's not progressing. He's not getting better. He's not learning. How much Logman blows smoke up the fans' butts, Bortles is the weak link. And this is what I said. Jets game blows your argument completely out of the water. 380 yards against one of the best secondaries in the league, lighting up Revis all day, who everyone says is still a top three corner. You watch Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers lately. How much more experience do they have than Bortles? You want to get rid of them too? That perfect touchdown pass to Julius Thomas on 4th and 7, was that Sandlot? I guess Robinson and Hearns are having Pro Bowl caliber seasons throwing the ball to themselves. Logman actually knows the game of football, and you don't have a clue. Everyone knows his picks are killing us, but we all wish he could be more like Teddy Game Manager and throw for 170 yards with 0 touchdowns and 1 pick. At the end of the year, Bortles won't even have played a full 2 seasons, Jets, 22 touchdowns after 11 games.
All right, thank you, David. Pretty good response. Look, I'm not saying that, again.
It's both.
It is both, right? But if you're just going to say Blake is the reason we're losing games, it just is so short-sighted to me. Are his negative plays leading to losses? Yes, but he is not, quote, the reason. Because, again, you're just discounting the positive impact. And then, you know, you go down that road of, to answer a question David asked rhetorically there, well, Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns aren't throwing it to themselves, but they're bailing out Blake all the time, and that's why he has good numbers, because they're the ones who are responsible for all of that, and on it goes. And there are people that are just dug in, and they're convinced. I guess I would ask those people, all right, which quarterback would you like to draft in round one this year? Because clearly you don't think he's improving, and you would like to move on from him. He's the one. He's the reason you're losing. So which quarterback are you looking to line up in round one? And this whole thing started with the comparison between Branch and Bortles. And we understand the importance of the quarterback position. But, guys, I asked kind of, again, knowing what their response would be. Blake Bortles hits unrestricted free agency this offseason. How many teams are lining up to sign him? How about everyone that needs a quarterback?
Yeah.
Every single one that needs a quarterback would be all over Blake Bortles in a heartbeat. Don't kid yourself. Come on. Let's get Harold on the west side wrapping things up today on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Harold.
Hey, what's going on, guys? You know, I think the biggest problem is that a lot of people in Jacksonville have become so used to calling the quarterback a bum that they've kind of become emotionally attached to that argument and don't really want to let it go. In my opinion, I'm actually very excited about Blake Bortles in the future here in Jacksonville. I think he's done wonderful things. In fact, one of the things that I want to see is I want us to figure out who our slot receiver is going to end up be going forward. I know it's easy to forget when you look at production that Marquise Lee was drafted ahead of Allen Robinson, but up to this point, it looks like Brian Walters has pretty much outplayed him for that position in these last 5 weeks. I'd love to see, especially with Hearns going down, I'd love to see Marquise Lee step up and really take control of that third wide receiver position. Another thing, you can't necessarily cut them right now because I know that you have better on the team. Not to be redundant, but I definitely agree with the Dwayne Grotz talk. We got to go out and get a third corner. And also, a guy that I'm really starting to be done with is Luke Jokel. And I would love to see us possibly go out and get a veteran left tackle in free agency. Because up to this point, it just seems like Luke Jokel, I don't care what the numbers say or if they say he's playing better than he is. It just seems like if he's not holding, he's on his ass while the defender is running past him. I'm just tired of seeing.
All right, Harold. Thank you for the call. Ryan?
All right. A couple guys here. Jokel, he's not going anywhere. There aren't veteran left tackles who are good. Don't hit the market. Understand some of your frustrations with Luke.
Let me just interject for a second. I'm going to ask you. I've seen, you know, I'm not trying to turn this into a draft-centric thing, but Tony, I've noticed the mock drafts starting to pick up at this time of year, and I'm starting to see a few mocking left tackle to the Jags in the first round.
I think that's asinine.
Asinine, okay.
I think there are other things they need to address. We've talked about Grotz. As far as slot receiver, I think that's Rashad Green's spot to lose going into next season. I think the next couple of games, especially if Hearns doesn't play, is a huge opportunity for Marquise Lee. Greg Olsen has to find out what he has.
Right.
He hasn't shown anything. He's been hurt. So that's, if you're looking at guys to look for, like, the last five games last five games of the year, say, okay, what's their role in 2016, leaves one of those guys.
What would you expect? Let's presume Hearns is not going to play this week. In two receiver sets, Robinson and Lee this week?
Not every time.
Because Walters has played in front of him over the last few weeks.
And I think Rashad will get more snaps. But I would expect Donald Robinson to be in that 95% snap range.
Sure. Lee's got to get opportunities.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, you'll see his work going from 20 to 45.
Snaps.
20 to 50.
Right.
So, big chance for him.
All right. What do you have coming up over the next couple days?
We got stuff. We have Mariota's story. We have Allen Robinson 72 or 78 yards away from 1,000 to break that awful string of a decade or so. And then Sunday, we take a deep dive into the red zone offense struggles.
All right. That's what been the topic of conversation
2005.
This week.
Jimmy Smith in 2005.
Wow. Unbelievable. Hey, we move on, and we'll do it again tomorrow. You'll have to check in with David Garrard, see if he's planning on coming by. But we'll be here regardless. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony with you. Thanks to Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union, at Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter. Thanks to Jim Wyatt of TitansOnline.com for joining us today, and all of you out there, crazy opinions notwithstanding. We appreciate you listening to Jaguars Today, and stick around because we've got XL Primetime on the other side. So for Fat Tony, for Ryan O'Halloran, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off. Have a great day from everybody here at Jaguars Today.
Now Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.
Woo!
That's great job!